The Lock-In Podcast is brought to you by Rotocloud, the all-in-one solution for managing hospitality teams. Rotocloud lets you plan and share rotas, record attendance, and manage your team's annual leave, all in less time than it takes to make a brew. It also makes life easier for your staff, allowing them to check their rotas, request annual leave, and even pick up extra shifts, all through the Rotocloud mobile app. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotocloud.com/lock-in. Hello and welcome to the Lock-In Podcast, the show that lifts the lid on the life in the pub trade by those working in it. I'm the Morning Advertiser's Ed Bennington. With me, as ever, are my two preferred co-hosts, James Cuthbertson and Heath Ball. Heath Ball is a well-known expert on the subject of wine, but that said, his wife often gets cross with him when he messes with her red wine. The other day, he added some fruit and lemonade to it, but now she's sangrier than ever. What a laugh! Actually got a laugh. I was expecting a groan with that one.
Oh, it's the pity laugh.
It was a pity laugh.
I was just like, oh my God.
There we go.
I didn't think it was that bad. It's a low bar.
You haven't heard the next one. So James used to run a brewery till he was sacked. And that's where he met his one-legged wife. She was in charge of the hops.
They're so shit, they just make you laugh.
There you go.
I tell you what, the only problem is that they'll have no crackers left at Christmas now.
This is true. Hats off to Gary in the office who came up with those ones for me. So, Gary's hat tip.
Funny looking guy.
He is a funny looking guy.
Great personality, though.
Welcome, chaps. So this episode of the podcast is focused on the Pubs Code and MRO, and we've got some special guests joining us to talk about those issues, including the Pubs Code adjudicator herself, Fiona Dickey, top operator Gary Searle of the Salt House in Somerset, who took his pubs through the MRO process, and we're discussing some of the history and legacy of the Pubs Code with campaigner Chris Wright of the Pubs Advisory Service and retired BII director Phil Dixon. So we don't look shocked, James. Don't look shocked. But before all that, I have a confession to make, guys. I'm afraid I cheated on you the other week.
Is it Gary's work again?
No.
You're on a podcast?
I did record another podcast without you, yes.
You clearly weren't a guest, I didn't think, because you had no value.
I was a guest, yeah. Well, no, I was a guest.
Really?
It was one that they wanted someone to talk about wine, so they called me.
Wow.
Was it Tesco's podcast?
This is the red wine. This is the white wine. If you mix them, it's rosé.
All the wine, red, white, and rosé. Yes. Sorry, Heath.
It's all right. Fine.
I mean, you weren't available because you're working really hard. No, hang on. You're in New York. I mean, yeah, I love the fact that we speak to operators all the time. They always say it's so hard. It's so hard. I've got so much to do. I'm so busy.
Industry's on its
fucking
knees.
Can we catch up next week? No, sorry, I'm in New York.
I was invited to New York. I was only out there 3 days. It was a research trip.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah, I was looking at the operation.
Yeah.
See how they're dealing with COVID.
Yeah.
What's new and exciting on the food and drink market? They do these things called loaded beer, and they basically have different flavors. And the one I had was a can of beer rolled in like hot sauce spices, and then opened, and then guacamole put on top, and a taco chip.
I mean, yeah, no, it just sounds shit.
It was terrible.
Yeah, but the tax man needs to know some benefits.
Well, there you go. That's it. That's how he's playing with
R&D,
it all back.
R&D.
Research and development.
No, I had a friend out there working, so he invited me out and just hanged out. Hanged out in Soho and drunk some wine. And
I mean, you could have gone to Soho in London.
Did a lot of dive bars. 8 o'clock in the morning, it's like Witherspoons, but cooler.
What'd you say? It can be cooler than Witherspoons.
Impossible to believe.
Didn't you say a jogger came into the bar or something?
No, it was brilliant. That was a good one. But the lady, the Royal Mail, not Royal Mail, but the post office lady came in the bar and she made some banter with the bartender, gave him the mail. And without saying anything, he went and got a mug and he poured beer into it and gave it to her. And she sat at the counter, did a couple of those in the mug like she's drinking coffee
on her rounds.
Yeah, on her rounds. And
well,
then off she went.
Brilliant.
This is like 9 a.m.
This is brilliant.
But I couldn't judge because I'm sitting here as well. At 9 a.m. I'm like, I was going to say
you've been there since 9 o'clock the following morning.
Yeah, no, so, good trip. Good trip. Yeah.
I mean, it probably explains why my postman's always miserable when I see him. He doesn't get that opportunity.
No, but give him some of the free beer you get.
Yeah, that's not
it always looks there. Terrible when you show us what you get.
It's usually from
and
you.
The wine. So I said it's terrible.
Right, apart from New York, what's been happening this week then, guys? Anything particularly caught your eye?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know why I'm asking Heath. He's been sat drinking loaded beers. Still licking the avocado off his fingers.
Well, obviously the weather's going to help a bit for some places and kill others, isn't it? That's going to be the... It's been a...
Imagine having like a...
For those listening north of Watford, we've got daylight as well.
I was just alienated all three of our listeners because they're all in the north.
Exactly. It's going to be interesting. We've got Father's Day coming up, of course, which is going to be interesting.
I always prefer Father's Day over the Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Mother's Day, they come in, they're miserable, they want to be miserable because they feel angry the husband hasn't really taken them somewhere nice. And they're sitting there and they brew away and they don't drink. It's like, I don't want to have a good time attitude. Blokes come in and they go, oh, Barolo, get me a bottle of Barolo, have a couple of beers to start. I don't have to talk to the kids today.
Yeah.
You can be quiet as well. Let's get hammered. Yeah.
So
I'll have the roast trio.
So my missus, roast trio, your favourite. My missus says, we've, Father's Day, I've organised to go out with your daughter, which I suppose is okay, and your niece. She's staying over all weekend, so we're going to go crabbing in wherever they're going to go.
So
right?
Sort of crabs I'm thinking
about. No. And I thought, hold on, sure it's Father's Day. Surely I'd call what we're going to do.
No.
So I said, no. So I'm working in the morning, so that doesn't work. I said, so you know what? Okay, why don't you do a barbecue for us all in the evening? I said, so let me get this right. I don't get a choice in what I do. I'm going to go to work and I'm going to have to cook for you all because your cooking's terrible. So I hope
she's
still doesn't listen. Bit. No, not at all.
Good.
But I had a couple of ciders the other night and told her she didn't do enough housework.
Oh, how did that go?
It's been a really tough week for me. To be honest, a really tough week.
Yeah. Excellent. I mean, I'm in your boat, actually, to be fair. My wife
you two
does no housework.
You two guys
I'm not
in
getting
boat.
Into that. Yeah, they sink. Yeah, all right.
You guys
let's get the fat joke out of the way now, shall we? I'm in the similar. I don't get a lot of choice. So my wife's decided what we're doing. You know, she's just gone ahead and booked some absolute shithole place that we've got to go to.
I saw her name in the reservation system.
So I'll be in the lockout of four, James.
Yeah, that's right. I saw that. She actually texts me a lot, your wife, but it was nice that it was about a dinner for you two guys, or three guys. That's lovely. Looking forward to seeing you for your trio of roasts.
So returning to work.
We're
actually supposed to be doing this. So the things that jumped out for me, hospitality staff shortages, record high. 83% more vacancies compared with March to May 2019. I mean, it's tough, isn't it? I mean, it's not
everywhere.
Talking about there's no simple solution.
The government's not even addressing it. Look at the airports. Look at there's just no staff around.
No.
Hey, but we've got our sovereignty back. Like we're all okay now.
Blue passports.
Yeah, we're better off now.
Can't go anywhere with them, but
yeah, we can't do it. Yeah, we can queue.
But they also, when you hear that, you know, listen to LBC and that, people are thinking, these people have just decided not to work anymore. No. Yeah. It's because you pulled the bridge away.
Yeah.
And they all think we're racists. And that's why they're not coming back.
They can't come back.
No, that's what I mean. If you could,
well,
why
if they
would
do
you?
Come back, we ship them off to Rwanda. So,
yeah.
Well, we're not really. We haven't even got them on the plane.
Yeah, that's true. That is quite funny.
Jeez. Yeah.
Pulling the flight at the last minute.
What was it, 400 grand for that flight?
God knows. I don't know. I mean, it's the sheer gritted teeth determination of Priti Patel to prove that she is the worst human on the planet.
She's Julian Assange. She's got him getting kicked. Yeah.
Is he going to be sent to Rwanda?
No, he's going to the States. Yeah. Probably a bit off in Rwanda, to be honest.
I noticed the other day, someone pointed out that she drops her E, her G's, so everything's at the beginning, and I can't stop hearing it now. She speaks very nicely, then just drops every G. So,
I don't know, man. We're in real trouble with this government. I think they, you know, they're acting like
they don't like us.
They don't like hospitality, and they want us to get back to normal. And they're not giving us a chance to get back to normal. How are you supposed to? Was it Clive Watson from City Pubs said he can't expand and grow because there's no staff to do it.
Yeah.
You can go and buy sites as long as you know as much as you like.
But they can sit there empty.
If you've got no staff to actually, you know, and then we're paying staff a lot of money. A lot, and everyone's sort of stealing staff.
Meanwhile, in Planet Oakman Inns, revenue's up 400% this month. The Twilight Zone.
Moving on. The economy is contracting, interest rates have gone up, 9 out of 10 consumers financially hit by the living crisis. I mean,
not opening customers.
Apart from them, yeah.
Are we talking recession?
It's looking that way, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
It's fact, isn't it? It's going to come through. Was it three times? We need three.
But you know, listen, it won't be Brexit to blame. It'll be COVID.
Yeah.
It'll be COVID because COVID made everybody leave this country, and they shut the borders. But we're free. It's COVID's fault.
But we're in great financial shape according to Boris. And even if it is a recession, it's not a recession. If he says it's not a recession, God,
it's like him saying he's an athlete.
Yeah. Did you hear Keir Starmer call him?
It's not a party unless Boris says it's a party.
Called him Jabba the Hutt the other day. Did you think that was a brilliant piece of work? Because he was sort of basically all the Jedi mind tricks he's trying to play on his, you know, the entire cabinet. You know, there is no recession.
And the Jedi mind trick doesn't work on Jabba the Hutt, does it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But also there are other similarities, obviously.
Yes, there is. Yes. It's going to be a weird recession now, isn't it? Because we're not facing masses of unemployment yet, of course. I mean, maybe that will be part of the solution.
But look at the cost of goods coming in. Look at the costs. Look at the import duties and stuff. Like, how are they going to deal with Northern Ireland? You know what I mean? Like, what are they going to do there? What, we're going to go to war with the EU over this?
Yeah, but if all these businesses go under because of the costs, then there'll be people to come and work in your pub here. So
it's a shit show, isn't it? It really is.
I don't know.
New Brum.
But even then, like, who?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Who?
Agree,
like, agree. If the Tories, who are they going to put in charge? Rishi did himself no favours.
Jürgen Klopp.
Well, he won't be in need of a job.
I like listening to him when he gets interviewed by people who've got really strong accents. He just looks like, you imagine him in bloody, up in Blackpool or somewhere. You'd be like, what?
Jubilee weekends?
Oh, what a washout.
Was it a washout? Yeah. I mean, we've heard mixed reports, some okay, yeah. But
I saw at the Red was Wednesday night, really busy, yeah, hey, party. Thursday, yeah, carry on, let's hit it hard. Friday, oof, feeling a bit delicate. Saturday, should we stay in and watch a bit of TV? Sunday, oh my God, it hurts, I want to cry.
We had these street parties down our way, you know, the bunting and all that. God. I just got home and I went in the front room, shut the curtains and watched the football while they're all outside, because I don't really like my neighbours very much. Quite a nice time.
You're the perfect guy to be working in hospitality, really, aren't
perfect. You? People. Put your face on, pretend you like everyone, go home, be honest with yourself. He does it the other way around.
Yeah, that's true.
He's the yin to my yang.
No, I just say to everybody, shit,
all
be
the
quiet.
Time.
I'm your daughter, just be quiet.
I went to a street party. Did my you? Street. Yeah, everyone then left, but no. And then it rained, so that was
God hates
me. Because your little cloud.
God hates me, basically.
Because the little cloud that follows you around like the flump.
Yeah, and you went there.
Poodle.
The other thing that actually did I saw in one of the papers, I can't remember which one, probably something reliable like the Daily Mail, apparently drinking lager is good for your health.
Okay.
But, and this is the kicker.
There you go.
Only if you have one a day.
Okay.
And keep it non-alcoholic.
Who's this sponsored by? Heineken.
Peroni Zero, is it right? No.
So basically water.
It's basically some non-drink. Yeah, I mean, it's not really lager then, is it? I don't know.
Quite news day, anyone?
Well, there's that.
But it's almost like
cards
against humanity.
It teases you with that sort of thing. And you go to your wife and go, look, and you go, oh, no, it's one a day. Quick, get it back. Oh, and it's non-alcoholic.
It's clickbait, isn't it? You've gone like that. And then they suddenly think that you want to read about that sort of stuff. And the next thing you know, news feed's full of it.
Next thing you know, there's a yak. No, we don't care. Right, okay. I think let's park that one there and get on with talking about the pubs code in MRO. You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast, and we're talking about the pubs code and the market rent-only option. To help us with that, I'm delighted to welcome Gary Searle of the Salt House in Somerset, who went through the MRO process and has kindly agreed to chat about the experience with us today. So welcome, Gary.
Welcome. Thank you.
So, you were pretty quick out of the blocks with your own MRO request, and I think it was with EI at the time, wasn't it? Now Stonegate. So, I mean, tell us a bit about that. Why you were eager to go MRO when you had the option?
Yeah, because I just felt the cost of the price of beer was so high, and with the rent as well, I think, well, if I come out of the tour, I can make more money out of the beer with a fair rent.
Mm. and I mean, when you talk us through sort of how it happened, you know, you was it sort of pretty much as soon as the pubs code came in, you pushed the button, or did you have to wait a while
for it? And because it fell on my review, so I applied to the PCA for it and for the review, and I obviously went through Enterprise and spoke with them as well and told them what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. I tried to do a deal with them to stay within the pub group without coming out on MRO, but they couldn't agree terms with me.
Right.
And we wouldn't far out, to be fair.
Right.
And the regional manager was excellent at the time. Mm. But unfortunately, the powers to be above didn't want to push it that far, and it wasn't that much different. And people get much better deals now than they were then.
Right. I imagine because you were quite sort of early into that as well, there was a degree of trepidation. From that, they didn't want to set a precedent by being too generous to one of the first ones, I guess.
No, I mean, the whole process, if they just said to me it's going to be basically 10% of your turnover, I would have known straight away that might not have been an advisable go MRO.
Right.
Because the rent I landed up in is very high.
Right.
It's £111,500 a year.
Okay.
Now, my rent before that was £60,000.
Right. And
So how much did you say your rent is now?
My rent is £111,500 a year.
Okay.
And before it was £60,000. And how much do you reckon the beer time was costing you?
Well, I worked out I would be about £60,000, £70,000 better off coming out of the beer time. But of course, it was dragged out through the whole summer season, so I didn't have that chance to sell a lot of beer to make the coming out of the time worthwhile for that 1 year. So that didn't help. They just dragged it out and dragged it out and dragged it out. And finally it came to being done. And it was the regional manager actually pushed and pushed and pushed to get it out of the way with, because it had just been going on so long. And I was becoming very disillusioned with the whole process. And fortunately I had a very, very good solicitor. And the solicitor who looked at my lease had done a very, very good job for me. And a lot of people don't use solicitors, need to really spend the extra money to get it looked at, because some nasty little clauses they put in.
What, like what? What was in there? What booby traps were in there for you?
Well, how do they do it? They pick pubs up in different areas, and they're doing the same sort of turnover, or they feel it's the same type of business as my model, and they put them against me. But it wasn't fair. Some of them they put against me, because one person, I obviously can't mention names, he chose his own rent.
Right.
And they said, well, considering what your turnover is and his turnover, your rent's fair. And when my solicitor looked at it, he said, no, because when his rent review's coming up, he's going to have a massive shock. So, and they put me against another one up by Bristol Rugby Ground, and their turnover's a lot higher than mine, and he was paying more rent than me, and he agreed it. So the people that agreed it were the ones they were using.
Right.
So when I went to the independent adjudicator, they refused the one that we chose, and they gave us a choice of two others. And so we had to take the ones we thought was going to be beneficial to us, but it wasn't. Mm. It didn't turn out that way. It basically said 10%.
Right.
No care about the fact is that I've run this business for 16 years. Well, obviously it was less then. It was 14 years. And that I was the one that was the head of running the business and building and keeping that business going. None of it was taken into consideration. A fair rent, speaking with people like Phil Dixon and other experts in the field, said, Gary, your rent should have been no more than 90.
Right.
So I felt the person working for me, who was recommended by the BII, didn't do what he should have done.
So
he didn't do his job properly.
You felt you were a little bit poorly advised by
yes.
that?
Yes, I do now. I've seen many MROs go now, they've gone a different way, and the rents have not gone up that much.
Mm.
And some of the ones that have gone MRO are very happy. And there are other people out there that send us emails and they talk to me about it. And I just say to them, mine is going to be different than yours, because now it's become a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had my choice over, I probably wouldn't have come out the tie.
Right, okay, that's interesting. Why? Simply just because it hasn't stacked up, or...?
Well, unfortunately, COVID hit us.
Yes.
And I had no rent concession. I had to pay it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did help me a little bit, but not a lot. And for the pubs that were tied, they had a lot of help.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've got friends that are fully tied, and they're making a lot of money on food. And that's really where I'm making my money. because where beer sales have gone down, food has gone up.
Yes.
And whereas if I stayed in the tide and I'd done that deal with them, we're only talking about 10 pence a brewer's barrel difference, mind. We're not talking about a lot. Mm. But they just wouldn't push to that. And I thought I deserved that because I've paid them so much money on my beer over the years. Over that 10, 12 year period, they made a lot of money out of me. Mm. And I always paid my rent on time. I always paid my bills on time. I kept the building up together, but they wouldn't bend anymore.
I think that's the problem, though, isn't it? They made their money. They were making money off you. They didn't want to lose that revenue because, you know, you were generating that income. So they'd look to make it elsewhere, which is the fundamental challenge with any of these deals, isn't that? They'll find a way to put that on. I mean, where are you at now, then? I mean, in terms of you say if you were going to do it again, you wouldn't do it again. Are you in a better position now, being free of tie, or do you think that, you know, actually you'd probably still be better off if you'd stayed in that
tie? Well, because of COVID, I probably would have been better off staying within the tie. Mm. But I'm not in the tie, and I had to battle my way through, and I've done it. I've come out of the tie. We're very, very busy. You know, a day like today up there, I went up there and I walked into a minefield. There's just people everywhere. And the Clevedon Seafront and Marine Lake has been fully restored. Mm. So people come to it because it's the best place to go for a swim in natural resources using the sea.
Right, yeah.
And it's packed down there, absolutely packed. And a lot of those people come in for a drink and they come in for food. So that's made it beneficial to me. Mm. It's just that high rent. And at the end of it, on my next review, the rent can only go upwards. It can't come down.
Yes.
That's a clause that they stipulate in their lease. Yeah. Whereas I feel if I'd had that 90,000 rent or thereabout, I would have had a better fighting chance rather than spend all my savings to pay the rent.
Yes, yeah. I mean, Heath, your ties at the Red Lion and Sun, I mean, would you, what are your thoughts? Would you consider MRO?
Or? I looked at it and thought, no, I didn't really look at it. I don't sell a huge amount of beer anyway. I do enough, but I just thought the time you've got to pay the extra rent deposit and all the headache and, you know what I mean? I just don't want to upset the apple cart, quite happy as I am. Mm.
Yeah. They did put a lot of hurdles in front of you before you went MRO. There's no doubt about that. They found every piece of fault they could find with the property and the maintenance side, stuff that they've, when they reviewed the year before, they were telling me I had to get done, even though I had it done. They then sent another surveyor. I have four surveyors in total, came around to try to find things that needed doing.
Right.
And they couldn't find nothing in the end. They stalled on a, what's it called? Asbestos report. Right. Now, I'm not being funny, but every year they mention asbestos report in the health and safety review. Mm. And it was said that there was no asbestos in the building. So I had them pay £400 to get somebody in to do a report for me, which took another 2 months to give to them to say there was no asbestos, but they already knew there was no asbestos. But they just hit me with hurdle after hurdle after hurdle.
Yeah, mate, you jump through the hoops.
And the amount of stress doing that as well. The headache.
There was a lot of stress.
And your time out of the business doing paperwork and organising stuff. You know, if you put down how much it cost you in time, it's already worth it.
You were going to say something, James.
You know, I was just going to say, I mean, obviously at the end of the day, you agreed the rent. And at that point, you could have gone back. You know, you had the choice, I guess, and you just did what you thought was right. But I guess you've got to blame the game, not the player. Mm. Do you know what I mean? That's just the rules. That's the way they've set it up. But
It is. But the way it's been set up by the government, I don't feel was set up correctly in the fairness to the landlord. Look, we all know what happens with funding when it comes to government parties. We all know what happens there. Without mentioning names or anything else, we all know that they will fund and all put their hand in a pot to support whatever government's in. So they're not going to squeeze on those people. Mm. And what they do, they've set up what they thought was fair. 10% is never fair. 10% is a high rent. You don't go to a nuclear power station, say, and it's rented ground, say, oh, you've got to pay 10% of your turnover, do they? Mm. You see what I mean? So 10% should not be a set rule.
But don't you think that's the PCA accepted? Isn't that the problem with our trade, that we seem to be outliers like that? A bit like the rating. You know, we just seem to be a soft touch for that type of regulation.
Yeah. It's all disproportionate, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what were your thoughts? What are your thoughts generally, Gary, on the pubs code when it came in? I mean, what do you think of it then? What do you think of it now?
I thought, first of all, it was going to be a breath of fresh air for the pub industry and for the landlords to make a fair income. Because if you go back 12, 14 years ago, hardly any of us were making any money to live on. Because the beer was so high, the rent, the maintenance, and it was the way forward to think, oh, I can make more money. It's down to me to make that money and push it forward. And I done it. I got through it. I got through recessions. I got through everything. And I've battled hard. I've got a very good business. I'm still, if I had put it back again, like I said, I said to you that I wouldn't probably have done it again. But in hindsight, I wanted to be at that tie. I've been battling for 10 years to be at that tie. And I had the opportunity, so I wanted to take it at what cost.
And from start to finish, how long did it take you to finally go from when you applied for MRO to come out the other side?
Over a year.
Wow. Okay. I see.
And has that changed now, do you think? Do you think is it a more streamlined process now?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
Well, we can ask...
I'll find out when I get my review next year.
we'll ask our guests later as to how it's changed. I suspect, Gary, you were probably a bit of a test case because you were so early into it, so there'll be challenges around that. But, I mean, do you think with the challenges that we're facing now and the stuff that's looming on the horizon, sort of potential recession, consumer downturn, all that kind of thing, do you think you're in a better position being free of tie with that you can perhaps have a bit more flexibility over your pricing, or do you think you'd still probably be better off if you were in the tie?
At the moment, I would say I'm better off at the tie.
Right.
Because I'm doing a lot of food, and that means I'm out of the tie, I'm not tied to my wines, not tied to my spirits, not tied to my ales. Mm. So I'm out of that tie, so it gives me the opportunity to earn more money and be more flexible with my pricing.
Hold on, Gary, were you full tie on everything? Not just a beer.
No, I was all tied on all my drafts, draft and fabs. My wine was out of time, my spirits were out of time.
Okay.
And conscious of time, so one last question, Gary. What advice would you give to any other operator that's thinking of going down the MRO route?
See what the rent comes out, and then do your calculations and check them and double check them, and then put a hurdle in front of you in case something like COVID comes back in or we hit a recession, because it's going to hit you hard. Fortunately, I had the finances, but a lot of pubs didn't, and they're no longer running those pubs. And it's very sad to see some of my friends lose their pubs because they just couldn't afford to run.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, Gary. Well, thank you very much for that. And a good system.
Especially one on leases.
Always a good idea.
I've never seen it myself.
No. Perfect. Brilliant. Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Gary.
Cheers, Gary.
Nice talking to you. Cheers, thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity.
Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This is the Lock In Podcast with myself, Ed Beddington, Heath Ball and James Cuthbertson. We're focusing on the Pubs Code in this episode. I'm delighted to say we've got the actual Pubs Code adjudicator herself joining us, Fiona Dickey. So welcome, Fiona, and thanks for joining us.
Hello, Ed. Thanks very much for the invitation. Happy to be here.
Great stuff. So, I mean, let's start with the basics, as Heath and James aren't that bright. what is the Pubs Code and where are we at? What's just give us in a nutshell what it's there to do.
In a nutshell, the Pubs Code regulates the relationship between tied pub tenants of the biggest pub owning businesses and their landlords. And the idea of it was to ensure that that relationship is fair and transparent, so that these tied tenants, there are two essential principles to it, are treated fairly and lawfully by their pub owning business and are no worse off than if they were free of tie. Okay. It was introduced in 2016. It covers six of the largest pub-owning businesses. They have to have more than 500 Thai pubs. And at present time, there's about 8,500 pubs that are covered by the Pubs Code.
Right, okay. And I mean, it's fair to say it wasn't or it didn't lack controversy when it came in, and I think there was a degree of feeling that what was brought in didn't quite meet the mark with some sides, didn't quite meet the mark with the others. You're the second Pubs Code adjudicator, so you've come into it much further down the line. I mean, have we addressed some of that? Do we think is it a better system now than when it came in, or are we still in that kind of challenging situation?
Well, let's go back and look at the reasons and remember the reasons why Parliament introduced the Pubs Code. Parliament does not regulate an industry on a whim. After four select committees and many years of tenants voicing concerns, Parliament decided to legislate because it saw serious problems in the tide industry. It said there were delays and lack of transparency in rent review negotiations, verbal agreements being ignored, even harassment of tenants at vulnerable times in their lives, and that those circumstances arose, Parliament saw, because of inequalities of bargaining power in that relationship. So what the Pubs Code does is it seeks to empower tenants in their business relationship, principally by giving them information. Information is power. And so what it does is it gives them access to information before they sign up for the pub. So lots of details about the pub, the tenancy, the rent that's proposed, enabling the tenant to negotiate and decide whether they want to take on the pub. They're also, the pub owning business also has to ensure that they take professional advice and that they have a sustainable business plan. So it's about getting off to the right start. It then entitles a tenant to a rent review at least every 5 years. And the it governs that the rent review process, again, with layers of transparency. So pub-owning business has to provide lots of details in support of the rent that it's proposing, a profit and loss statement with reasonable projections, etc. It also provides tenants with rights of fairness in conversations with their business development managers day-to-day, and those conversations have to be recorded. Other rights, like the right to information about their their premises insurance, and the right to price compare on the open market. It also gives tenants, every time they renegotiate their rent under the Pubs Code, the right to ask for a market rent only option to compare the tied and free of tie options to see if they are indeed no worse off than if they were free of tie, and if they want to actually take that option and go free of tie. So that's in a nutshell what it does. The place we're at now, last week or very recently, I published the latest tied tenant survey about attitudes to pub companies and experiences of the Pubs Code. Really important that the adjudicator tries to understand these issues from a tenant's perspective. This is the first such survey I've been able to do since my appointment because of the pandemic. But for the pandemic, I'd be into my third survey year.
Right. Yeah.
Which would give me more evidence of any progress. But we are where we are, and the signs from that survey are encouraging. I would say 62% of tenants are satisfied in their relationship with their pub company. If you think of the reasons why Parliament intervened, that's encouraging. Now, it might be a pandemic bounce, because we know that these tenants had a lot of support from their pub company during the pandemic. So we will see how those figures.
I was actually expecting them to be higher because of that bounce from the pandemic, because we saw that real sort of support for the Thai tenants, and we thought we'd see more a more positive view. I mean, we certainly see that. So I think it's the licensee index. Their figures are more positive than yours, aren't they? I mean, is there a reason why yours are lower than, say, the other industry standard?
The pub companies themselves, who are regulated, have recently done their own survey of attitudes to the support they gave during the pandemic. They asked different questions. The timing, theirs was published almost at the same time, but the timing's incidental. They asked slightly different questions. They asked about attitudes to that support. Those figures were slightly higher. But what I was really encouraged by is that 75% of tenants were satisfied with the transparency of the discretionary support they got during COVID. Now, this is an area in which I directly intervened. Though the pub companies were all, of course, looking at how they could support their Thai tenants, I was satisfied that they had a legal duty under the pubs code to show that they were being fair in how they allocated it. So what I persuaded the pubs code, the pub companies to, was a position where they were transparent about the methodology, how they were allocating it, so that tenant A could compare themselves against tenant B and know that they were being treated fairly and getting their fair slice of the discretionary pie. Now, I have to say, some of the pub companies, Admiral First and Stonegate Second, came out in that way earlier in the pandemic and came out with transparent schemes for a given discretionary support. I then spent time engaging with the other pub-owning businesses, smoothing the way to consistency, which we eventually reached with all of them. And that, I think, tenants have recognised that transparency was important, and the pub-owning businesses, I think, are seeing the benefit of that with the bounce in tenant attitudes.
Yeah.
But you did compare that statistic to my statistic. Now, I think the other thing I asked a different question. I asked about satisfaction with the relationship, and tenants can take anything they like into account. I also did something different for the pub companies, in that I've compared the performance of the six pub companies. So I think that's very important I do that. That the industry is able to compare the pub companies, that new entrants to the trade are able to compare satisfaction with the pub companies. And I think that gives those pub companies an incentive to look at where they can do better. Admiral has set the standard because 80% of their tenants are satisfied with their the relationship with their pub company. So that shows me the realm of the possible. The realm of the possible.
I guess that answers my question about which is the best pub company, and that's according to your survey. Then is that a fair?
They won on the satisfaction stakes. If there are other pub companies came out top in other areas, I would be amiss if I didn't mention, for example, that Green King tenants are the best informed about the pubs code.
Is that as a Green King tenant, are you the best informed?
Yep, I read it every day.
Sometimes twice.
And then, where there have been statistically significant variations from the average, I've highlighted the stragglers as well. Stonegate tenants are the least satisfied about how their BDM handles repairs. Only 27% of them are, for example. So that gives, I think, the pub companies, a clear fear about what they need to do.
And size of the sample of the people you're interviewing, how many tenants does that represent?
Well, what I did in order to get more statistically reliable data was I increased the survey sample by more than 50%. So in previous survey sample, the surveying, which has been 2017, 2019, there were 400 tenants. We interviewed over 600. And the results that I've highlighted on the infographic, which you can find on my website, are all statisticians tell me are statistically significant.
Okay.
Try saying that after yes. a couple of times.
That's easy for him to say.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we will direct people to that. I'm conscious of time, and one of the big things, though, that we've talked about or that comes up with PubsCode is the MRO. I mean, are we seeing... Where are we at with that in terms of numbers of pubs looking for MRO? Because I think there was a big expectation when the PubsCode came in, loads would go for it. We spoke to a chap earlier who went quite early on and had quite a painful experience and doesn't feel it's benefited him. Where are we at? Are we seeing more pubs going for this now? Is it settled down? Are we seeing less? I mean, what's the general view of it?
A lot to talk about. I'll try and pick out a few key points. To date, it's about 1,300 tenants that have gone through the MRO process. Back in the early days, in 2017, of those that started the process, about 7% ended up going free of tithe. Mm. And I recognise that it was a slog at that point.
Yeah.
And we've worked really hard to make the process easier. What I can say is that when you look at the tenants who have been through the process and their MRO process has ended this year, of those, over 35% have chosen to go free of tithe.
Okay.
What that indicates to me is that it is a more realistic option now for tenants going through that process. It's not a perfect process, and there are two really important changes that I'd like to emphasise. One is there's been a change in the law from the 1st of April, and now tenants have got up to three months to negotiate a deal with the pub company before they have a deadline to submit an arbitration referral to the pub's code adjudicator. No tied tenant, we know, wants to find themselves in litigation, and Secretary of State recognised this, we recognise this, and the Secretary of State changed the regulations so tenants can engage in the process and use that 3 months to negotiate before they decide to move forward. In terms of numbers, what I'd like going forward, I'd really like to emphasise that wanting to go free of tithe is not a precondition for using the MRO process, far from it. It is the way the tenants can compare if they would be worse off if they were free of tithe. So it could be a part of every tithe rent review. We did a small research project on tenants who have been through the MRO process recently, and a significant number who use it have no intention of going free of tithe, but they want to make that comparison. That's what it's there for. That's what Parliament wanted to give them, the ability to lever and negotiate, a good deal. And many tenants decide to stay tied on cracking deals using the MRO process. And that's fine. And it's also fine if they choose to go free of tithe. So the other big change is that I'm about to shortly issue guidance to pub companies to change the way that they respond to an MRO notice to make it smoother for tenants. So this is going to mean, in most cases, transitional periods for any increase in rent in advance and deposits. In most cases, payment of dilapidations won't be an issue if the MRO is a new tenancy. There's going to be more information required from the pub company in support of the MRO rent that they're offering, because they've got to be reasonable, commercially viable from the get-go. So there's going to be more detail required on that. So that, you know, hopefully that's going to address some of the big issues and make it, you know, even better.
Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. Well, I am conscious we're over time, but thank you for that, Fiona. We've barely scratched the surface, I'm sure. But
we have, yes.
Things to come on the horizon. We'll get you back. You can talk to us about that.
All right,
brilliant.
Then.
All right. Thanks, Fiona. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Bye. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Lock In Podcast, and we're talking Pubs Code and MRO in this episode. We've got a couple of great guests joining us now, pub advisor and campaigner Chris Wright from the Pubs Advisory Service, and former BII director and pub industry veteran Phil Dixon. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Ed. Thank you.
Hi, Chris.
That's great. On a Friday afternoon, on a sweltering day, I've got nothing else to do.
I mean, I'm not going to regret inviting you into this, am I, Phil?
Too late.
I already am. Yeah, there we go. Brilliant. Okay. So, I mean, let's go back to the beginning. Let's talk about how the Pubs Code came about. I mean, I think it's fair to say it was a controversial move. I think we the campaigners wanted one thing, the pub industry wanted another. We ended up with something in the middle. Is that a fair assessment of it, do you think? Maybe Chris, maybe you can answer that one.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's hard to call me a campaigner anymore. I'm much more of a service provider. I mean, in the early days, yeah, it was all about campaigning. There was no clients to service.
Yes.
Basically, publicans had very little chance of redress, and the Pubs Code really creates an opportunity for people to have statutory redress, and it creates memory. I mean, all the previous sort of attempts to, self-regulate the trade, for the good or ill, the only thing they lacked really was memory, and that was that ability for publicans to learn from what had happened and have a consistency, where things were going wrong. So for me, self-regulation has its part to play, undoubtedly. In the early days, the peers scheme, which Phil was very responsible for setting up, worked well. But PCAS just lacked memory. That's all it was. And so really the Pubs Code brought apart a sort of wider range of issues that tenants could get redress on, and ultimately gave people the ability to get results, that's where it was. It's controversial.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly people don't like regulation, but I think the market had gone too far in the other direction. It was too unfair really to sustain self-regulation, so that's where we are now.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
So Phil, I mean, same question to you, really. How do you view the where the pub the Pubs Code came from and what we've ended up with?
Well, I'm a bit old in the tooth. I take the view that every time politicians intervene in our industry, the pub codes came out of the beer orders. Without beer orders, there would be no Pubs Code. Suddenly we have breweries getting legislation because they've got 2,000 pubs. Next thing, we've got two property companies with 16,000 pubs. What on earth was that about? And I really think people have too much confidence in Parliament to come up with the solutions. For example, the beer orders said every publican in Britain should have the protection, sorry, England and Wales, should have the protection of the law of the land, should be protected by the Landlord and Tenant Act. So why is it today that less than 20% of tenants are protected by the law of the land? Because companies set out to, how can they get around things? As soon as MRO came in, they have the brainstorming meeting saying, how do we get around this? Well, it's a bit ambiguous here, it's a bit ambiguous there. It's not well worded here. We could judicial review this. So it hasn't worked as people intended. It will never work as people intended because they always look to get around it.
I mean, Chris, do you agree with that? Do you think that's a fair comment?
It's a fair summary of where we are. I mean, I think the issue there is whether or not the government can actually deliver reform and deliver enforcement, effective enforcement. I mean, there are plenty of laws out there. It's about having the power to enforce them and uphold them. And often, if it's left to a small business versus a big business, there's this huge imbalance of power. So the Pubs Code was set to redress a couple of key points. The imbalance of power in the trade was, up front, really, one of the things, because tenants who were in trouble were basically facing High Court. And that was kind of gaming them out immediately. They just couldn't do it. So the idea of a low-cost resolution and redress through this arbitration system was undoubtedly, I think, a really smart move from government. And it did tackle, I think, an awful lot of unfairness. I mean, the Pubs Code exists, in my view, to really, you know, level the playing field and remove exploitation. It's not to say that pub companies and businesses, you know, who are of a mind to do so, won't continue to try and come up with new, novel, inventive agreements, models, etc., to try and go around the Pubs Code. But that's Fiona Dickie's job to be vigilant, you know, to be on top of that and make sure that if there is gaming, that she, you know, spots it, deals with it, etc., in an efficient way. So I think it has its place. I think it's established its place quite well now after 6 years. Undoubtedly, it's made a lot of changes. I think the jury will be out probably for another decade or more, if it was for good or for ill. But I do believe, going back to Phil's point about the beer orders, we're long overdue a review, a competition and markets review into the wholesale beer sector. So 1989, what's that, 33 years ago now? We used to have a competition review every 20 years during the 20th century. So you would get one in the 1920s, in the 1940s, the 60s, and then the 80s. We haven't had one since. Yet this market, I mean, as I'm sure you'll agree, Ed, has changed out of all recognition. You know, the new entrants, the different beers, the different ways consumers use pubs. Mm. So it's massively different from 1989. So I honestly think, I don't look to kind of reform the pubs code. I literally want a competition and markets review. I think it'll be fairer for everybody. Publicans, brewers,
but as we've said, you know, every time the government interferes and doesn't, we create further problems. And I mean, is that not running that risk of creating yet more difficulties but in a different way?
I think government have to respond to the business threat. I mean, you know, businesses will do what businesses do, you know, and I think that the government have to be fleet of foot to make sure that business owners get into the markets fairly, that the markets give a fair rebalancing of risk and reward, and if they don't, they need to regulate. So risk and reward must be rebalanced. If it's not happening, regulate it, and consumers need to be well served. And I think that is a difficult job for government. They do have to keep putting, you know, out constant surveys and speaking to the industry, but unfortunately, as I say, since 1989 they really haven't listened, not that hard.
I also think there's an issue of political will. You've got to remember that this legislation was driven by Lib Dems in a coalition, and at the time they had 59 MPs. By the time the code came in, we'd had the 2015 election and Lib Dems were decimated. I mean, I was at the Great British Pub Awards that year, and some MP said to me, "Where's the Lib Dems?" I said, "You need 10 to take a table." I mean, they weren't there, and so this is legislation driven by Lib Dems, inherited by the Tories, who didn't really believe in it.
So I'll take issue with that. I think the select committees, which were cross-party, was what drove the Pubs Code. I think they had enough. And, of course, it was started with Peter Lough. And Peter Lough is definitely not a Lib Dem. So, ultimately, the select committees, which began back in the north, started looking at things like the machine type, which even to this day hasn't been sorted out from the gaming machine type. So, 2004, you can go way back to then, when that was really the first time that I think a cross-party of MPs had a serious look at the industry. In the wake of the beer orders, you know, even in 2004, we're still talking 15 years on from that event. So the subsequent select committees, which were, again, made up across party, not particularly led by any party more than another, they came up with, "We've had enough. The industry's had enough chances in the Last Chance Saloon to drink and show us they can fix these problems." Mm. And so that's why it stepped in. And of course, I mean, the interesting thing was the legislation was carved by the support of Tory MPs who rebelled against the three-line whip. So to say it was a Lib Dem policy, actually it was supported by the Tories wholeheartedly.
It's all about some time. All I said to you there, Peter Lough and his colleagues had issues, rightful issues as well. They were right to criticise the major pubcos. But Peter Lough is chairman of the PGB, which supports self-regulation for below 500s. So I'm one of those. The one thing I do like about MRO, Ed, is it enables long-serving, superb publicans. I've got two mates 8 miles away. 27 years they've been in the pub. They've won more awards than Meryl Streep, including UK licensees of the year. And they, to this day, have zero discounts because they've been in their pubs that long.
Right.
And it's absolutely injustifiable why Britain's longest-serving great publicans are paying far more for their tight beer products than people coming into the trade for 5 minutes. And yeah, MRO enables them to challenge that. and rightly so. MRO is also very good for multiples. It enables them to maximise their opportunities. And in truth, if you're coming up on a lease and you want to assign it because you're approaching retirement, being able to go free of tie. I was talking to Sydney Phillips this morning. There's still a market for free of tie leases, far more than tie leases. So that's the good thing about MRO. What's totally wrong with MRO is the amount of bureaucracy just to enable you to fulfil the right. When a pub company in every agreement wants to release the tie, it's 14 days. It's in there. It's in all agreements. It's 14 days, have a rent review.
Before, Phil, it could be quicker than that. It could be overnight.
And so when it's the other way around, it's you've got to do an obstacle course. If you get through that, you've got to do the Krypton factor. Then you've got to take a Mensa test. And once you've got all that passed, you might be able to get through, provided you can agree. It's just wrong. The amount of you can imagine it would have been a joy to the PubsCo to say, well, we look at all the things they've got to go through.
We talked to Gary Searle earlier, who was one of the early one of the early adopters of taking the MRO option. He was ready to go at when the PubsCo came in, went for it quite early on, and it took a year for him to get through that process.
There's no reason for that.
Has that improved?
Just before you come in there, not only did it take a year, Gary Searle is a cracking publican from the southwest. He's got the Salt House at Clevedon. It's a seasonal pub. So his pub company sat him out throughout the high season, maximising the tide profits, and then waited till the winter came for it to settle. So it was cynical and it was wrong.
Yeah,
That's a good point. The pubs code on a financial level, we just go down to business. What does it do? It's a transfer of profit. The government identified in its impact studies, there was at least two of them, that the pub companies were making an unnecessary or excessive profit of at least £14,000. The government identified that in their impact studies. So what they said was this £14,000 has to transfer to the tenant. So the mechanism MRO was designed to enable the transfer of profit. So really the code and Fiona Dickey and the PCA are really to oversee a financial transfer of profit and to make sure that that's happening. So I suppose if we stand back and look at it in terms of money and what it means to a tenant, it means 15 points of gross profit. They're no longer buying Tide beer with a low gross profit of 52%. They can now go to the free market and they can get a GP of 67. So it's a 15-point shift in GP. That's what it means in terms of money. So it's undeniable that some tenants like being Tide. That's why it's an option, hence the letter O in the MRO. So you don't have to take it.
Yeah.
But as Phil was describing with Gary Searle, and I don't know Gary personally, but the triggers to MRO and the events that have to happen are totally unnecessary. They were brought in by Anna Soubry because the pub companies quite rightly had argued, and I think successfully argued, that we do not want everybody going MRO on day one of the code. So i.e. that would have been July the 21st, 2016. So they brought in these events which would stagger everybody across a 5-year period. So everybody gets a right within 5 years, but we couldn't all go on day one. Scotland have ignored that now. The Scottish pubs code that's being written is MRO on demand. So actually Scotland have learned from the English and Welsh mistake and said, look, just let people go MRO on demand for any reason. It doesn't have to have all these triggers and all of these events because they cause lots of disruption and lots of arbitrations. And I've been involved in, 100 arbitrations, I would say, in the last 5 years. So masses of experience with what happens there.
So
let's talk about unintended consequences, because, I mean, that's one of the other phrases that gets bandied around whenever we talk about the pubs code. Heath, you bullied me into doing this episode of the podcast on MRO, and you've made a miserable twat and sat there saying nothing throughout most of it. So thanks for that, mate. You have an issue with the fact that one of the consequences of MRO is the impact on the kind of offers you can get on pubs from pubs codes now.
Yeah, I think that we're losing talent. There's not many lease options out there for new talent coming into the industry who want to get a little pub and there's no point getting a tenancy because you've got no security. So you can't, there's not many, how many leases are on offer? these days. Mm. There's not many around. Mm. Pubcos
mean long-term leases.
Yeah, long-term leases. The pubcos just keep the pubs now. They turn them into managed house and off they go. Yeah. Where would you give
it
out?
You can build value versus effort. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think the trade isn't supporting entrepreneurs anymore.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I think the long-term leases are dead. And I think all they're looking for is short-term people that don't know how to value pubs. I mean, that's part of...
Yeah, roses around the door. Back to the old days, though, isn't it? Take your premium, burn them, take next premium, burn them, and go through.
Can't get a premium on 5 years, to be fair. Mm. I mean,
But if the agreement's knackered, if the agreement doesn't work, then it doesn't matter how long it is.
Yeah. No, but the rents are falling. If you go for short-term leases, 3 years, 5 years, the rents will fall like a stone. So property companies are cutting their own throats by doing that. If they shorten the leases, all they do is reduce the rent roll. It's crazy. Mm. But it also means people can walk away for cheaper. So instead of people having a 20-year burn, you know, and potentially having a very long lease and a very expensive personal guarantee, you can walk away now. And I think that's why the pub companies are really struggling with this now. They're stuck on this knife edge, very uncomfortable for them. I mean, financially, I don't know where they're going with short leases. It's crazy. They're just cutting their own throats there financially. You need to have long-term investment in long-term, good quality lessees and tenants. And quite frankly, at the moment, there's shows very little sign that they're interested in doing that. But I think that will cost them big.
Do we think that's going to change? Do we think that there's going to be a switch back at some point, which they recognise that they need these?
You'd hope so, but you know, everything changes, doesn't it? You know.
I'm writing for US something at the moment about different agreements and how they're trying to attract. I interviewed two assistant head teachers 2 weeks ago who'd given up their assistant head teaching jobs. Mind they were in Wolverhampton, and to take a lovely country pub because they liked this offer where they could be creative on food.
Right. Yeah.
So I think the thing what bothers me is you see tenancies advertised. This is a 5-year tenancy, but the landlord company can give them 3 months' notice if they don't like the colour of the shoes.
Yeah.
They're not even five years, are they? They're 90 days.
They're 90 days. And by the way, in early 1970s in Whitbread, the Whitbread policy was no brown shoes east of Ascot. If you wore brown shoes east of Ascot, i.e. anywhere near London, it was disciplinary. So it wasn't, that was half serious there. But they're 90-day agreements. Why would you pay 40 grand a year and commit life savings to...
People need to take more advice, Phil. It's classic, isn't it? I mean, people coming into this is a business, it's not a hobby. I mean, you know...
Do we still have that problem? Is that still an issue? Because, I mean, one of the biggest problems that certainly I saw when I came in a few years back was that a lot of the legacy issues were the wrong kinds of people being brought into the industry, redundancy burners, you know, ex-police, ex-army, kind of pension pots being, that's all sort of, supposedly that behaviour is resisted now by the pubs because they're supposed to be a bit more choosy on who they're allowing in. But is that still an issue? Are we still seeing this problem?
I think risk and reward. I mean, it needs to be rebalanced. There's not enough reward for people, so therefore true entrepreneurs are avoiding the sector. Mm. You're getting in people probably, you know, who just want somewhere to keep warm and have a bit of a drink and maybe have a roof over their heads. That can't be good for the actual property owners.
That's more like squatting than entrepreneurial, isn't it, really?
It's the complete opposite of entrepreneurialism. It's the complete opposite.
But don't you think it's because the places are overvalued, though, Chris, in terms of they're valuing the place as if they're running beautifully, and they're not. They're in the gutter, and they need someone to live it and breathe it and do everything to make it right. They're just too ambitious too early on the rents.
The margins, James, aren't there. You know, you know full well yourself what kind of margins you can achieve out of wet and dry, you know. And to be honest... we've suffered multiple winters back to back because of COVID pandemic, and this is really only springtime for the hospitality industry. We haven't got our summer yet. We haven't had a summer, and this summer isn't looking great because of the cost pressures and because the pound in people's pockets and, you know, all of that that's going on. So really this trade has had a phenomenally bad run. You know, we've had more or less winter since 2019 right through to maybe the springtime this year, but we're still only in spring. We haven't had a summer. We really do need some breaks out of this. I mean, MRO is a tool. It's amongst many tools, and I've often said to people, use it as leverage. And in fact, I would honestly say, hand on heart, during the lockdown, of the people that came forward looking for advice and I was helping with MRO, I would say 50% of them stay tight. What it did is it made the choice really difficult. The tenant or the lessee was going, my goodness, I can hardly get a you know, a Rizla paper between these two deals. Which deal do I take, Chris? What a beautiful position to be in. Both brilliant deals, both something the tenant can work with and move on from.
Well, but two things on that is, bearing in mind what the major pub calls pay for their beers, it's surely within their ability, I'm not accusing them of being the mafia, but it's surely within their ability to make the tenant an offer they can't refuse, because they have the economics of scale to do that. I mean, the one thing I would say, by the way, and I need to say this, that I've been in rooms trying to defend the Tide agreement, and the ropes come out from the back because they've all been fought on for repairing leases. I've also been in a room full of Hook Norton, Palmers of Dorset, St Austell, where they love the Tide relationship. But the one thing about the pandemic, it killed many things, but it also killed the argument there is no value in the Tide. If you're in the northwest of England and you're a Robbie's tenant and Boris has just announced your pub's closing, how comforting it was to open an email or a letter from William Robinson saying all rents cancelled till further notice. It's been great to see the support Tide tenants and Tide leasing leaseholders have got. And for me, I'm glad I live long enough to see it.
Let's jump straight on that point. Is that support contractual? Is it part of their lease or their tenancy, or is it a concession?
It's always been, Chris Schofer, they've always claimed they would do such things because there was value in the type.
But it's not in the lease, is it? It's completely discretionary. So it's not contractual. So therefore, if pub companies want to use that as a medal on their chest and say, we help people during lockdown, then add it now as a side letter to every single lease and tenancy that you have a pandemic break clause. Add it.
Not disagreeing with you at all.
So the challenge is there.
I'm tied to Grinking and got two Free of Tie sites. And on the Free of Tie sites, one of them we paid 50% rent, the other one we paid full rent, and Grinking wrote the rent off. Mm. You know, I know where I'd rather be. Do you know what I mean? I'd rather be over there paying no rent. Mm. I think they're
absolutely. Well, that's what the commercial rent debt legislation is about, to write off pandemic rent debt, which I've been involved in that actually. That's another bit of legislation, but that's for another podcast. But you'll have to be quick because the legislation ends in September. But yeah, people that have run up debts during lockdown, the landlords have not agreed to write it off, can use legislation to write off that debt. So I'm helping a number of publicans and hospitality businesses. So a slightly different issue, but I make that general point. If the beer tie has real value, then add that value to the lease or to the tenancy agreement. Put it in as an actual clause.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's a fair point.
Right. But also not attract entrepreneurs as long as pub coast of bears acts without regulation. And we just got, I went to see the Farne Islands last week to see some, I'll tell you what, 10,000 birds 5 metres away. Well, it was a bit pokey.
That was in Boris about it, it was similar.
So I came through a place called Ferryhill in County Durham, where the publican has given the keys back to the pub co because they wanted to put his pre-COVID rent up from 28,000, because he'd done really, really well, to 98,000 from 27. We all know sales are down post-COVID. And when you say to a pub co surveyor, What was the FMT the last time you judged that? We can't find it. It's not on file. But you said that about it, like the other one last week. Oh no, that one the pigeons broke in and ate it in the storeroom. Oh, okay. But didn't you use it in a case the other week? That particular file, wasn't it? Oh no, I can't give you that, data protection. So pubco surveyors and the way they conduct themselves is that drives entrepreneurs away from the industry, because they know if they dramatically improve a pub, they will get exploited and penalised at rent review. That's always happened. It still happens today. And I don't know. I think should the code extend to regulate pub co surveyors? It's a fair question.
Mm. And I'm afraid it is one we haven't got time for, boys, I'm afraid, because you've already run massively over my thing, and that wasn't just with Phil's massive technical problems at the start, which we've managed to cut out, but I'm going to have to draw a line under it. We could probably go on for hours. James needs to wake up. Yeah. Come on, James, wake up. Oh, he's there. Right, brilliant. Thank you very much for that.
Cheers, guys.
Really appreciate you getting involved, and we'll catch up.
See you soon.
Yeah, no problem. Cheers, James.
Sorry, Eddie, it's my fault at the beginning.
Don't worry about it, Phil.
See you later,
guys.
Ed's looking great.
You're listening to the Lock In Podcast, and we are at the end of this week's episode. Some of you will be relieved to hear. I mean, we've been talking about PubsCode, MRO. We've heard a lot of different people. It's a tricky topic. I mean, it's a long, in-depth topic, so really thanks for suggesting it, Heath.
It was, yeah, I'm sorry, man.
It was a really good idea.
It was going to be fun.
I mean, there's a lot in there, isn't there? I mean, there's a lot to discuss. It's technical. Some of it's quite tedious. Some of it's quite important. I mean,
ultimately, it all comes down to the golden rule. He who holds the gold makes the rules.
Right.
And they're the landowners, you know, in terms of that relationship. And there have been great gestures through lockdown, making sure that people were looked after, and, you know, the likes of Greenkin done a great job. But ultimately, they're the ones that, you know, that own the pubs.
Mm.
And they're the ones that, unfortunately, the people below that, it's just the way life's been since, you know, Dickensian times.
Yeah.
The rest of us just have to play to that tune best we can and try and hustle our way through it.
It's all got confused, hasn't it? Because it's been jumped on by different agendas. No. It's become a totem for the anti-pubco people, for those that are pro. And there's all this kind of battle in the middle of, you know, the noise around it muddies the waters and makes it very difficult. Ultimately, the point of it, as we were saying on all of this, is, you know, to give people options too. The idea was well-meaning. It was to give tenants the opportunity to have a lever to pull to get a better deal. The challenge is that clearly, obviously, that doesn't necessarily happen. We've seen, as Gary was there to say, you know, he didn't get a better deal. And is that down to the negotiations? Is it down to the pubcos gaming it?
But the pubcos know what it's worth, right? They ultimately can press one button and tell you exactly what that tie's worth, and that's where they make the negotiation. And do they play with you a little bit just to make sure that you stay and all the rest of it? Maybe. Mm. But ultimately, it screams of needing to properly do your homework. You enter the agreement, you sign it, and you get on with it.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? There's no point in doing it and then having a moan about it.
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah,
you know the prices. You know what you can buy outside the tie, what you're buying in the tie. Work it out, do it right yourself. But ultimately, we're in a better place because there's a choice. And the choice can be forced. It's just whether the number's right for you.
But you're in a better place because there's a choice, but you're in a worse place if you're an entrepreneur and you want a long-term lease and you want business stability, all the kind of things.
If you're an entrepreneur, you wouldn't take on a five-year tenancy. Why would you bother wasting
a 90-day tenancy?
Or 90-day, right.
But you say that, but some do. I mean, I've known several operators that will only take a five-year tenancy. And they look at it from a very short term, you know, if I can make money in that five-year period, walk away with a decent wage, then great. So maybe you've just got to be more mercenary or more clinical about those deals. You know, like any business, you know, you go, okay, if I make money out of it 10 years, 5 years, 20 years, is there any difference? Are we just too hung up on that time frame?
Yeah, but I think, five years goes like that.
It does.
You blink your eye and you're done.
You don't establish business for 12 months.
Yeah, it
takes, and then you've got the last 12 months looking at the exit door.
But maybe it does, but maybe it sharpens your focus, doesn't it? Because, I mean, we've had this conversation with you. You know, you've got a pub, you know, you've been in it for 12 years, you start to think that it's your own, and then it comes a point where you go, actually, well, no, I might not actually have the lease renewed. And you have to face up to the reality that it's not your business, ultimately. You're the caretaker. It's your operation, but ultimately you're the caretaker of something that's going to be passed on to someone else down the line. Whether it's whether they carry you out in the box because you pissed off your wife too much, she stabbed you, and it's a...
Probably that.
That's more likely. Or because your lease has run out.
What a lovely way to bring things together.
No, I thought so. I thought it's a nice touch there. Domestic violence.
So part two of the MRO is that next week?
And then part three the week after.
Be like Star Wars.
Four.
Yeah. In the edit, do you think they could take the middle 3 hours out?
I probably will, actually.
Listen, I've got to go back to work. You guys know.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. It's happy days.
I've got a wife at
the moment. I've got no water on the hottest day of the year. Tim's water, we've lost water to the Red Line on the hottest day of the year, and I'm going to have to shut.
Do you want
to
take some from here?
Why are you going back then? What's the point?
Well, no, like I'll sort of go back and sort of
shout,
calm all the fluffing around, you know, everybody panicking.
He's going to go back and calm down. He's going to go back in and start shouting.
I'm going to be on the phone to Tim's water like I've never heard before.
I'm going to get him to fill some containers here. You can take it back with you.
Yeah, he can carry on the train.
Right.
Right, Spilney. Right, on that note, Heath needs to go, so... And I nodded off halfway through and he was talking. So let's draw a line under it. Thanks very much, guys. We will be back in a couple of weeks with more pub stuff, hopefully a little less highbrow.